Meantime, we're joined by Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night and 32 Thoughts, the blog and the podcast. I'm going to talk a little bit later on with Kevin Woodley about the Tuukka Rask situation, but I never thought that we'd see Bruins fans turn on Tuukka, let alone so quickly. The chance of we want Swayman already last night as the Boston Bruins lose to the Anaheim Ducks. There's a lot I want to get to today, and I want to get your thoughts on Emily Castonguay. But do you have a quick thought of what we're seeing with the goaltending situation in Boston right now?
I mean, he never got exhibition games, right? Or AHL games,
AHL.
Right?
Yeah, never.
He was supposed to play, and they got shut down for COVID. So, yeah, I mean, you know, this just shows you, this is the business, Jeff. You know, we're it's a results-driven business, and you also want empathy. And this is where the lines blur, right? Like, I look at it, and I'm sitting here, and I'm saying, okay, Tuukka Rask was supposed to play a couple of American Hockey League games. They got wiped out because of COVID. So the Bruins just said, okay, you know, we're going to sign him and we're going to play him. And there was a possibility that this could happen. You know, one of the things going on with Jack Campbell in Toronto is there's a theory that he's tired. But there's also a theory that the team's rhythm got thrown off by all the COVID shutdowns, and that's affected him just as much. I mean, he could answer the question. But so I'm looking here at Rask, and he hasn't played at NHL speed all year. He's suddenly thrown into it. And the fact that it's a bit rocky, I don't know why anybody would be surprised. But if you're Bruce Cassidy, you're sitting here and you're saying, man, we got to win games. I got to win games. Like, this is important to us. So it boils over a bit. And, you know, that's kind of the way it goes. We want empathy, but we're also in a win business. Like, we talked the other day about the Calgary fans were busting me about all the support we were trying to give Koskinen on Saturday night. Hey, we're trying to win a game here. Shut up with this guy. It just shows you, you know, we want to be empathetic, but we also want to win games.
You know, it's to me, I've always wondered, you know, what is the hardest position to jump into in the middle of the season? Like, we've seen defensemen in contract situations not start until December. We've seen the same thing for forwards. We've seen players join teams late. And I've always wondered about a goaltender, just because so much,
you know,
that's the thing. Like, I don't have any way to prove that, but I feel that way, Elliot. And I don't know whether I should or not. I'm sure goalies will tell you, yeah, it's the most difficult. Maybe defensemen will tell you it's the most difficult. But it feels to me like if there's one position that's the hardest, just to jump into cold, middle of a season, boom, you're starting now from zero to NHL speed. To me, the toughest has to be goaltender. I have no empirical evidence to prove this. This is just gut. That's how I feel.
Jeff, this is sports radio. We are not looking for proof. We are looking for hot takes.
Okay.
Don't bother sports radio. As a matter of fact, I think proof is actually forbidden in sports radio. You're not allowed to have proof. You just have to rip the strongest possible take and go from there.
Tuukka Rask to the Edmonton Oilers. There you go. Boom. There's your hot take. In four games, they've given up on him. One of the best goaltenders the Boston Bruins organization has ever seen. Team Canada announcement. I want to get your thoughts on that one. But Emily Castonguay, the news yesterday, the Vancouver Canucks, she becomes the first assistant general manager in team history. And the phenomenon of agents going over to the dark side, whether it was Kent Hughes or now Emily Castonguay, very much continues in the NHL. We don't believe that Jim Rutherford is done populating his front office with women. We're still waiting to find out who the general manager is going to be. But your thoughts on Emily Castonguay, the new assistant general manager of the Vancouver Canucks?
Well, I think she's really smart, and you just go from there, right? She, you know, I've dealt with her a little bit, you know, not as much as I've dealt with some other agents, but I've dealt with her a bit. And, she, like, all my dealings with her, you can tell there's a really smart person there. And, you know, the other thing too, and I have no doubt that this, I have no doubt that this appealed to the Canucks, is that I wasn't surprised that it didn't leak out. I'm kicking myself a bit, actually a lot. So something I should have thought of, her name, But mm-hmm. I know when I dealt with her, there was always, you know, some people are willing to deal a bit more in, you know, what's the future, or what are you thinking about this? And her answers were always like, we'll deal with the future when we get there, or I'm not willing to cross this line in terms of information right now. So I could certainly see this situation, how it unfolded, because it's obvious, like, her clients knew, and, you know, people around her knew, and obviously the Canucks knew, and it didn't really get out. And I'm not surprised about that in her case. In my dealings with her, she was always very careful about information that she would share and information that she wouldn't share. So, and I know that would appeal, obviously, to the Canucks and Rutherford. So, you know, between those two things, you know, like I said, she's obviously a very smart person. I really thought the whole storyline that came out yesterday, that I don't think anybody was expecting, it was really powerful. I thought Ian McIntyre's story on it last night was excellent. Really well done. And, you know, I try to be a very logical thinker, but I do recognize that sometimes things happen that there's no answers for, or we can't explain. And, you know, just the whole story about her sister and the last conversation they had, it's really powerful, emotional stuff.
It is. And I,
you know, also, Jeff, I also had a conversation yesterday that I'm going to write today with the last female assistant GM in the NHL. I spoke to,
Angela?
Now she goes, Angela Schwartz is her, is her married name. I spoke to her yesterday, and, you know, it was a really interesting conversation. She talked about how excited she was. She woke up yesterday. She saw the news on Twitter. She was very excited, and she talked about how, she got a job in hockey. She was hired by the Devils, actually, out of Bowling Green, where she was taking a sport management course and also worked on keeping stats for the hockey team there. And she worked in an internship by the Devils, with the Devils. And then when she asked Lou Lamoriello for a letter of reference, and the story as she tells it is, he said, I'll give you a letter of reference, but I'd also like to offer you a job. And she wasn't the assistant GM. She became the assistant GM later in Anaheim. But she talked about that moment when she was told she had a job, because she said that she wanted to work in hockey since she was 5 years old. And that moment you get told you're going to work in hockey and you're going to have a job in it, you know, she said that the feeling that Emily Castonguay must have had when she was told she was being given that job, it reminded her of that day when Lou Lamoriello first told her she was going to have the job. And, you know, it was a really interesting conversation. She had a great experience, she said, in hockey. She left the business after working for Nashville, and she said that she was a little bit burned out at the time. She runs a bakery now, and she says, I actually work harder now than I worked when I was in the NHL. But she said she was offered a job in Columbus when Columbus was starting up as an expansion team, because she'd done some of the same work in Nashville. But she said, no, it was time. I was a little bit burned out, and it was time to try something else. But she's very excited for Castonguay, and it was a really interesting conversation. She told some really good stories about, and she said she was very lucky that she was surrounded by people like Lou Lamoriello and she said Jack Ferrara, who brought her to Anaheim, and David Poile, who brought her to Nashville, who were incredibly supportive of her. And so, you know, the Canucks are going to be supportive of Castonguay. So hopefully, when she looks back, she'll feel just as positive about her experience.
I think Max McNabb had a Max lot
McNabb,
to do with her.
Yeah. She talked about Max McNabb too, about how, like, she, you know, she said that her New Jersey and Washington, and she was in New Jersey, were some of the first teams to do, like, really break down analytics. And she charted faceoffs and hits and turnovers and giveaways, like a lot of the things now that are sort of the first generation of advanced stats as we saw them. And she said that Max McNabb in particular, he didn't just want the faceoffs. He wanted, okay, neutral zone, power play, penalty kill. Like, you know, it was the first person she met. And this was, what, 1980, early 80s, probably about 84, 85, where she dealt with someone who really wanted broken down in that way. We had a good conversation about that, about what was important to the Devils at that time. And they were big on time on ice. And she also said that the one of the things that was she really was grateful for the most was the Scott Stevens arbitration hearing. She said that Lou Lamoriello gave her a lot of responsibility in that particular case, building the case for Scott Stevens to be the compensation for losing Brendan Shanahan. And, you know, she said that initially Scott Stevens didn't want to come to New Jersey, and it worked out that, you know, he was the start of what they became. And she always felt very proud of the role she played in that, but she was also even more thankful that when they hired outside counsel to represent them, Lou Lamoriello said, "You're going to be our primary point person on this file, and you're going to work on it." Because it was a big victory for the Devils.
So this is going to be part of the blog coming out?
Yes, but now they've given it away. Like, I'm sure it'll be in 25 articles before I finally get this thing done. But, you know, I just wanted to say it.
Never a bad time to tell Angela Schwartz the story. That's totally fine. That's a great one. Now, I think a lot of people will look at the Castonguay hiring and say, on the one hand, A, that's fantastic. But two, this seems sort of out of sequence here, where an assistant general manager is named before a general manager, but this is a different time. Should we look at this and say this is a further indication that Jim Rutherford is in charge in Vancouver, period?
I think that I don't get caught up in titles. Like, I think too often people get caught up in titles. I remember when I got hired at Sportsnet, or maybe it was CBC. It was one of the jobs. Someone said, like, you know, "What do you want your business cards to say? What's your title?" And I was like, "I don't care. Just put a title on it." And they said, "You can't say you don't care. You have to have a title." And I just didn't care. Like, I don't care. I know what my responsibilities are. Look, I think ultimately Jim Rutherford's going to be making the decisions there. I don't care what the titles are. But you want to set up a front office where the best front offices and the best places of work are when you have people with different opinions who feel comfortable that they can give them honestly, that there will be no repercussions, obviously, as long as they're not over the line. And at the end of the day, someone's charged with making the call, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what this is going to be. So, there's no way that, like, Vancouver just had their interviews. You've got to think that I have to believe that everybody in those interviews was told that there was, if not a certainty, a very good chance that Emily Castonguay was going to be part of the group. Okay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if someone had an objection to that, they're not going to be the general manager. But I would bet that everyone was like, "Fine, if that's the team you're putting together here, then, you know, then I'm good with that." So I just think that everybody coming in here knows how this is going to be working. You know, Castonguay said she's going to have certain responsibilities. Her voice is going to be heard in everything, but she's going to have certain responsibilities. As long as everybody knows what's expected of them, I think it works fine. And B, I think we all know at the end of the day that for the next few years, the ultimate decision is going to be in Rutherford's hands.
Team Canada, men's Olympic roster named today officially, kind of leaked out last night in a double IHF gaffe.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
That happens. So it's everything from your veteran Daniel Winnick to your, you know, recently drafted Mason McTavish. Anything stand out to you? Maybe Josh Hosang. Anyone stand out to you from the Olympic roster named today?
Well, one of the things I think that happened with Hosang in particular is I think, you know, you and I and probably a lot of other people have been wondering, would Hosang get the call up to Toronto? And I think I have some clarity on that now that Hosang's on the Olympic team. I think the Maple Leafs and Hosang's representatives had a discussion about it. And I think it was around the time that Marner, again, forgive me if I have my timeline slightly off. I'll double check them after. Marner was either hurt or in COVID protocol, And then Kasha was hurt, was out in COVID protocol too. So maybe I think there was a thought about, you know, do we give Hosang a contract and eventually and have him come up and play a game? But I think what eventually was decided was that, you know, I think the Maple Leafs knew that Hosang was on the Olympic radar, and they knew that if he signed him, he might not be able to go and probably wouldn't be able to go. And I think because at that point in time, it was only going to be maybe for one game, I think they just decided, why do this? Like, if Hosang was going to be in the NHL for sure, then maybe they sign him. But if there was a chance he was going to be in the NHL for just a game and then go back to the Marlies, they didn't want to ruin the Olympic experience. So I'm curious to see where this is going to be afterwards. You know, I think, too, like Eric Staal, I'm wondering if, you know, this is going to be the start. You know, we just talked about Rask not getting a chance to play games. Is Eric Staal going to be on an NHL roster at the end of the season? Like some of these other players here, too. You know, I think that I think it's going to – I'm rooting for the team. I hope they do great. I'm disappointed for our buddy Devin Dubnyk, who was on the podcast last week, that unfortunately wasn't able to make the team. But I'll be rooting for them. I hope they do great.
And hope it's a great tournament as well. A couple of things before we let you go. Keith Yandel ties Jarvis yesterday. We'll break it tonight. And then afterwards, Chuck Fletcher, general manager of the Philadelphia Flyers, tomorrow will address the media. Don't know what he's going to say, but there's been one move made today as John Torchetti comes in as an assistant coach to join Mike Yeo on that bench. Any idea? I mean, they're going to get the good news story in first. You know, Gord Stellick put it, you know, had a sort of tongue-in-cheek this morning on NHL radio, said, you know, this is like, you know, the parents are going to get divorced, but they're not going to tell the kids about it until after the birthday party and then break the news to them afterwards. It does kind of feel like that in Philadelphia. They want Keith Yandel to have his moment, have the celebration, and then the bad news, whatever it is, comes on Wednesday, or the, you know, the sobering wake up the next morning comes on the Wednesday. Any idea what to expect out of Chuck Fletcher on Wednesday when he addresses the media?
I just think that I think that there's going to be some commentary about just where they're going, like what the direction is going to be. You know, they had their scouting meetings. They've had talks with ownership, Comcast, about where they're going to go. And I think the question here is going to be, where are we going? And at some point in time here, they're going to have to address, you know, Giroux's future and, you know, Ristolainen's future and just any other futures. Like, I've said it before. I've heard Ristolainen's been indicated he's prepared to test the market. I mean, that could change, but we'll see. You know, I know that they're really trying to clamp down on the Giroux talk, but I think everybody feels here that there's going to be a cup chase, and then we'll see where things go in the off season. But that's the kind of stuff I think, you know, we're going to talk about here. You know, I did want to say one other thing too. I meant, since we're talking about the Flames here, who had a big game last night, we're on in Calgary. You know, they took a big run at Justin Falk in the post game last night with the tweet, which was, I mean, it's pretty funny. You know, you have to laugh at it. It was a good one. But I had a couple guys tell me this morning that Justin Falk comment about Canada, It is a bad omen for the trade deadline. Very bad omen for the trade deadline.
So
because they don't.
Here's the thing. I don't think it's just trade deadline. I think it's free agency as well.
Well, one before the other, right? Like one before the other. But you know, how many Canadian teams here are going to be buyers? I think Toronto's a buyer.
Edmonton.
I think Calgary's a buyer. Edmonton, we'll see. Like, we'll see. I want to see how that straightens out, because Ken Holland is held very firm to, we're not moving our top picks right now. Like, I think he faced a lot of pressure to go do something, and he's like, we're not doing this with our top picks. So I want to see where Edmonton is in a couple weeks before I decide what they are. But I'm just wondering if these teams are thinking – if we have to buy, we have to buy up here.
Mm-hmm. I see. You and I mentioned this, I think about a week ago on the podcast, that, you know, considering what's happening with Canada and the nature of how our country is addressing the pandemic, what effect this has on players waiving their no trade to come to Canadian teams. And then by extension, after that, you know, does this affect Canadian teams and their ability to shop on free agent day? And I think it would be folly to say, oh, no, it'll have no effect whatsoever, because I think it will. Like, I'm with you. I think it will.
I think that Falk thing is, I do know of like one player right now, and he won't confirm it, but I know it's true. I do know of one player who's pretty prominent who's already said to his team, don't even think about Canada.
Interesting. Did you see the Erik Karlsson news really quick before we wrap up here?
I did.
So our listeners, Erik Karlsson today underwent successful surgery to repair a small muscle tear in his left forearm. Injuries of this nature can vary in the recovery time, but it is expected he will be reevaluated in mid-March. So that is the latest with one of the superstars around the NHL. You have a thought on that one quick, or are we punting?
You know what? I don't want to make Brian Trottier wait because I know the circumstances, but yes. Just disappointing for Karlsson because he was really having a comeback season.